Living with a chronic respiratory condition doesn't mean giving up the things you love to do. At Blue Zone Health, we're here to help you breathe easier and rebuild your strength. Our online cardiopulmonary rehab program offers tailored exercises, self-management training, and expert support from certified respiratory therapists. Accessible anytime, it's designed to reduce breathlessness, improve lung function, and empower you, all while connecting you with a supportive community. Visit bluezone.health and take the first step towards stronger lungs and a healthier future. Blue Zone Health. Breathe better, live better.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Cozy Lung Lounge. Today we're going to be talking all about smoking. So I've got Kelly and Gina here, and we're really excited to have this conversation with you guys.
Good morning, everybody. How are you doing? Looking forward to talking about a really important topic in lung health today.
I don't think there's any more important topic than smoking, or I should say not smoking. And we'll get into some details about what exactly goes on when you smoke. Why do people smoke? What's really in a cigarette? It's not like the cigarettes from 50 years ago. They put all kinds of interesting chemicals in.
And I think the other important message today is that it's never too late to quit smoking. And there are some really valuable things that can happen in your body and in your lungs when you do stop smoking. So please always consider smoking cessation. There's benefits that even happen as little as 20 minutes after your last cigarette. So I'm excited to talk about it. We're going to, I think, go ahead and kick off by talking about what goes on in your lungs when you do smoke, kind of explain some of the negative impacts of smoking, and then get into our smoking cessation.
Well, you know, there are many, many impacts on the body when you smoke a cigarette, but there's one that nobody ever talks about, and that is what exactly is in a cigarette. There's a lot of chemicals and things that they put in there, for example, to make the cigarette burn evenly. There's something in there, though, called enzymes. And an enzyme is something that digests things. And what happens with these enzymes when you smoke a cigarette is those enzymes start slowly digesting your lungs. Yes, you heard me right. Slowly digesting your lungs. So every time you cough, and people say, oh, it's just my smoker's cough, but you're literally coughing up microscopic pieces of your lungs. So think about that for just a minute before you reach for another cigarette.
I had a patient today that said she only smokes a pack of cigarettes a day or less, because if she smokes more, it would hurt her. It burns her throat and she gets a sore throat. That seems like that's what you're talking about there.
That could be, but we're talking also all the way down the lungs, all the way to the air sacs, that it's digesting all of that tissue as it goes.
What else is in the cigarette?
There's 7,000 chemicals, depending on the brand that you buy. So it depends on a lot of things, but a lot of those are preservatives, for one, just like any other kind of food. Tobacco is a leaf that's grown, it's dried, it needs to be preserved. The enzymes, the chemicals that make it burn evenly. I saw a picture somewhere, I think I have it in my program, of exactly what all goes into a cigarette. But I wanted to mention also that I remember growing up in school and people saying, don't smoke, you'll get lung cancer. Don't smoke, you'll get cancer. And what nobody ever said until I became a respiratory therapist was, don't smoke because you'll get COPD. That was the big scare back then. And the truth, both are true, actually. But I think that for today, we're probably going to talk more about COPD than anything else. But it still rings true.
I've had that conversation with family members before. They were so worried. You know, these are still fairly young smokers in their 40s, wanted to get their lung cancer screening, and they were just all up and concerned about that. And I had to let them know, no, you know, lung cancer screening is important, but regular tests for COPD is important starting in your 40s.
Most definitely. And it's hard for them to do that because they don't know what to ask for. They don't know to go and say, I need a pulmonary function test because I'm a smoker. And if they don't have any signs yet of any trouble, probably their insurance won't pay for it. They've got to have some kind of qualifier so that the doctor will refer them to have a pulmonary function test.
Now, there's different kinds of cigarettes. Is there any difference between light cigarettes, full flavor cigarettes? Is one better than the other?
I've had a lot of patients tell me that menthol cigarettes are better for them and healthier for them than regular. I said, no, no, no. And then back in the 70s, remember those clove cigarettes? Krakatoa, something or other, clove cigarettes. Those were all the rage. Anything that's burning, that you're breathing the smoke into your lung, no matter what it is not good for you. That's not what our human body was designed to breathe.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's lots of different things in cigarettes, but one of the most important things that we think about is nicotine. And there's lots of different ways that you can get nicotine, but nicotine itself, while it makes you feel better in the moment, it increases your dopamine release. The only problem with it is it creates these long-term problems. So there's a lot of risk of an increased risk of heart disease, stroke, cancer. And the reason why that is because a lot of times it damages your blood vessels. Nicotine just is not good for your blood vessels, and it can increase your risk of blood clots as well, which we know that strokes are often a blood clot in the brain. There's also different lung damage, and then it can just be a really addictive property. So just going down to the basics of what a cigarette is and why people smoke it is for the nicotine. And that itself, while it makes you feel good in the moment, it can have a lot of negative side effects long term.
Well, cigarettes and the nicotine also has a terrible effect on the nerves. And I don't know the exact science on this to thread it all together, but if you look at a lot of the sprays and the chemicals and things that people used for pest control, contains derivatives of nicotine. And why do we as adults, if we smoke, crave nicotine? Because of the calming effect. Everybody says, why do you smoke? Oh, it calms me down. It relaxes me. And that's true. It relaxes and calms the nerve. But that continuous bombardment of nicotine on your nervous system, as well as your lungs and heart, can really wreak havoc. And Amy, you mentioned blood vessels. Another thing that they don't scare you about when you smoke is pulmonary arterial hypertension. So a lot of smokers get what's called pulmonary arterial hypertension, where the pulmonary artery really clamps down and then blood has a really hard time getting to the lungs. And if it has a hard enough time, it will back up into heart failure. So one more reason to quit smoking if you are.
This makes a lot of sense. Nobody knew this, but I'm an old smoker. And I quit smoking a long time ago using nicotine replacement, but this really makes sense to me. I always crave dopamine and a kind of an addictive personality anyway. And that nicotine was really like a psych drug for me. And getting off of that, the nicotine replacement really helped. But that makes sense then, the nerves and the blood vessels and just getting that constant hit of feeling good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So good for you that you quit smoking. And I just want to throw in, we'll talk a little bit more about quitting later, but it can be done. It's hard. It's super hard. I will say that. But step at a time, you do the best you can. If you need patches, do the patches and just wean yourself off of the amount of nicotine that you need. If it's more of a habit, something you do when you wake up every morning or after dinner, something like that, those are things that you can change. And eventually get all the way off of cigarettes.
You know, as many as 8 out of 10 COPD related deaths are in the United States are caused by cigarette smoking. Almost all of our COPD is caused by cigarettes. And so, yeah, I'm glad we're doing this episode to talk about it. If I quit smoking right now, what will happen to me today, or will it take a year for me to get any benefits?
Like I said at the beginning, it can only take 20 minutes to start to see some improvements after your last cigarette. A lot of times when you smoke cigarettes, your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up, and that's really just not very good on your cardiovascular system. You know, your heart rate and your blood pressure go up when you exercise, but this is a different type. This is not the healthy kind. And just after 20 minutes of stopping smoking, you actually start to see that decrease in your heart rate and your blood pressure. They go back to normal, and that lets your heart and all of your blood vessels relax a little bit. So that's much healthier for your cardiovascular system just in the first 20 minutes.
But after that, it can take quite a while for everything else to work itself out of your system. When you smoke, you end up with carbon monoxide levels that are really high, which are not good. And that takes about 12 hours to work out of your system. And Amy has written up a whole list of things, you know, if you quit, then in 2 weeks or anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 months, your lung function will maybe start to improve. And as mentioned, your lungs don't really repair themselves that well as an adult. So maybe your lung function will improve, but that doesn't mean you're growing any kind of new lungs anytime soon.
If we're doing our pulse oximeter checks to see what our oxygen level is, and we're smoking and getting some carbon monoxide poisoning, those two things aren't compatible. That pulse oximeter doesn't know whether it's carbon monoxide or oxygen on those red blood cells. So you may be faking yourself out a little bit, thinking you're 97%, when in reality you're 88% oxygen plus another 9% carbon monoxide. So that's really important for our listeners to think about.
Our red blood cells have 240 times the affinity for carbon monoxide as they do for oxygen, which means if you smoke a cigarette, your red blood cells grab onto that carbon monoxide and hold it for a good long time, keeping you from getting all the oxygen that you need.
And when you smoke, one of the other damages that can happen is you've got these tiny little hair-like structures in your lungs called cilia. And they're really there to help kind of clean the air. I think of them as kind of like brooms for the air that's coming in and out of your lungs. And when you're smoking, you can either damage and destroy those cilia, or you can paralyze them. And within the first 1 to 9 months, it just really depends on the person and how long you've been smoking. Some of that, what we call the smoker's cough, and some of the shortness of breath may ease up a little bit because some of your cilia that may have been paralyzed instead of destroyed are starting to kind of come back to life and work a little bit better. So even just, you know, less than a year, you should be starting to see a reduction in that cough and then improvements in your breathing just by the smoking cessation.
That's another tough one, though, because the cilia are the tiny little hair-like projections that are part of what's called the mucociliary escalator, and they beat north, if you will, trying to keep a thin, clear layer of mucus, keeping your lungs clear. And when you smoke and get irritated, your body naturally produces more of this mucus trying to clear your lungs, and that's where you get the smoker's cough from, because now the cilia are all drowned. And they can't do their job because there's so much mucus, because that's your body's defense trying to get rid of all of the smoke, and they just stop. And so that's why they get the cough, 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 because now you have all this mucus in your lungs and no way to naturally get rid of it.
One thing that happens about a year after you stop smoking, and one thing that we work with a lot when we're talking about risk factors, it's we have lots of different questionnaires where we go through risk factors in our position. And so one of the things that we look at is heart disease and people's risk for heart disease, coronary heart disease, and smoking is one of those risk factors. And when you've gotten to about a year after you stop smoking, that reduces your risk of coronary heart disease just a little bit. You know, there's still damage that's been done, but the more that you can give your body that break and let your body heal, the better off you are and the lower that risk of coronary heart disease is.
And one other disease that no one talks about is fibrosis. There's idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, there's interstitial lung disease, but smoking can cause those diseases. There's many, many, many subtypes of ILD and IPF, but smoking is definitely a known cause of fibrosis in the lungs.
Hi, I'm Kelly, a registered respiratory therapist with Blue Zone Health. Do you feel breathless much of the time? Are you unsure of how to manage your breathlessness? Is it keeping you from doing all the things that you would like to do? I'm here to help you learn to work with your healthcare team to come up with a plan that will work for you. There are lots of tools, tips, and tricks, and breathing exercises that you can do now that will help you breathe easier and more effectively. I look forward to joining you on this journey and empowering you to breathe better.
Another effect of smoking that we haven't talked about yet is that on secondhand smoke on other people. So children growing up in households with smokers have a much higher risk of asthma, and they continue having that COPD risk into adulthood. So then they have asthma the rest of their lives. then they wouldn't get into midlife. They start to have COPD even when they haven't actively smoked themselves. So that secondhand smoke is really a big deal for babies, children, spouses. Everyone around you really is harmed, even though you don't think you're blowing the smoke towards them. You're still are harming them in small ways.
You know, I used to have patients that come to pulmonary rehab at the hospital, and the patients would come in smelling like smoke. And I would say, you know, so-and-so, are you smoking? And, oh no, my husband still smokes. You know, I can't get him to quit. And I had many conversations with many spouses of many of my patients just saying, you know, your spouse is trying so hard to stay quit. It's really hard when you smoke. Oh, I smoke outside, they would say. And I would say, well, if that's the truth, then why does your spouse smell like smoke when he or she comes in? And they would tell me, oh, yeah, they smoke in the car when they drive me here. And so that makes it really, really difficult for somebody who just that smell just brings back the habit, brings back the memories, and brings back the relaxation. And even though that patient or person is not actually smoking, they are, because they're getting that secondhand smoke. And not only that, but I remember a friend telling me that the smoked smoke is worse for you than regular cigarette smoke coming off the end of a burning cigarette, because that person has inhaled everything and now is exhaling the byproducts of that and the carbon dioxide. And the person sitting next to them who's not a smoker is not getting in all the oxygen that they should. Another interesting fact I learned about smoking, does it seem like, since none of us are smokers now, that when we go somewhere and people are smoking, that the smoke just kind of gravitates to you no matter what? It has to do with the, I'm going to get this wrong, oncotic pressure, the partial pressure that's in the cigarette smoke. So the partial pressure of cigarette smoke and all the chemical components of that in that smoker are much, much higher than they are in me or someone who's a non-smoker. So all those components, right, things go from areas of higher concentration to lower concentration. That means somebody sitting two tables over at a restaurant outside smoking, all their cigarette smoke is going to find me because I don't have all of that chemicals in my system.
I think it's really important, you know, to quit for yourself. It's really important for your own personal health to quit for yourself. But with all these things that we're talking about in secondhand smoke, you also have to think about the fact that other people around you, whether it's, you know, members of your family, your friends, or if it's just strangers out in public, all of them are also affected by your smoking if you do it around them. So, you know, even if you don't quit for yourself, quit for a family member or a loved one or a friend or just everybody else who you may be around when you're smoking, as you're starting to realize some of these negative side effects of secondhand smoke.
And you know, there's a whole lot of resources to help somebody quit and stay quit. And a lot of them are free. If you just Googled help quitting smoking, there's a program 1-800-NO-BUTS. There's all kinds of free programs, and there's also other things available to you. There is medications that can help you that we can talk about. There are support groups, and sometimes your insurance would even be happy to pay for you to join a group or something to help you quit smoking.
Yeah, as we have a lot of smokers that we take care of, we're still going to take care of you even if you smoke, and that's okay. We want to support you in all ways. But providing you with strategies is great. I'm always going to put a quit line card in somebody's bag. Even if they don't want it, I say, just take it, throw it in your drawer. Someday you might want it, and then it will be there. Or call them today to explore what kind of resources they have. You don't have to quit today just because you called them, but knowing what's available to help you is really important. I use the nicotine patch, and I would just put it on my arm and rub it. Every time I needed an extra hit, I would act like the genie, you know, rub my patch. And while it didn't give me more, it made me feel better to have that kind of thing on.
A lot of the products in cigarettes and nicotine, they're biochemical addictive products. I mean, it's not your fault that it's hard to quit, because these are addictive chemicals that are in these products. And we understand that it does, you know, release dopamine, it does release endorphins, and it does kind of help improve your cognitive function, actually, very temporarily. So there are a lot of I guess, good feelings that come along with smoking, and it can kind of become a coping mechanism for a lot of people. But that has nothing to do with you, honestly. It's just kind of biochemistry. So as we're going through this, just know that if you're struggling to quit smoking and that's something that's really been bothering you, it's not a moral failing. It is, you know, just a biochemical addiction as well. So we're here for you. We know that it's hard and that there's a lot of reasons why it's hard. So please don't take that personally to yourself as feeling like it's a moral failing.
New data shows that it may take up to 30 times for somebody to quit smoking. And, you know, the first time you quit, it's going to be really hard. The second time is going to be really hard, but you're going to get a little bit more resilience each time. And so the next time it may take you much less effort to put it down. And so each time it gets a little easier, it gets a little clearer on your whys and your hows, which works, what doesn't work. I talked about patches. What are some other things that might be helpful to people to quit smoking?
I think the support groups are one thing. I've had a couple of patients tell me they did hypnosis. I think the important thing, kind of pull it all together, if you need chemical support such as a patch, do it. You know, if you need a phone number that you can call every time you feel like having a cigarette, so you call somebody and say, I've got this craving, and somebody can talk you through it, that's there for you. There's a lot of things available. I think medications temporarily help. You know, what other things are there?
I know there's actually different, like, gums and lozenges that are nicotine gums that can really help as well. It's kind of more of a short acting temporary thing, but those can definitely help. And then there are some medications, like Kelly was talking about, that you can actually get prescribed by your doctor to help with smoking cessation as well. So if it's really something that you're struggling with, you can always talk with your doctor about getting a little extra help with that.
Some really good tips that I like to give to my patients. Definitely I send them the quit line information so they can talk to professionals, but make some little changes in your day. So if you normally smoke when you first get up, try to delay that 30 minutes. The quicker you grab that cigarette when you wake up, the more highly addicted you are. I'm one of those that would really like it first thing as soon as I wake up. The other thing is make it less convenient for you. If you have your cigarettes on your nightstand, lock them up in the shed in the backyard. Put them in your glove box in your car so that if you want a cigarette, you're going to take extra effort to get up, go all the way outside, unlock the shed, get the cigarettes. You know, that takes a lot of steps. You know, that may help you cut back by 25 or even 50% by just some of those small changes.
Some of the psychologists say that the best thing to do is just normalize not smoking. Gina, as you mentioned, it was normal for you to get up and want a cigarette and have one right there, but normalizing getting up and instead, never mind, and just walking right down to the coffee maker and then going right to the shower and then coming right back down to breakfast and normalizing a routine without cigarettes.
Smokers often get extra breaks over other workers because you go out to do your cigarette break. You can still go out and have a breathing break where you do the nice deep breaths, clear your lungs, walk around outside. Whatever you would do on your cigarette break, go ahead and do that without the cigarettes. If you have a pencil, you can smoke with a pencil. You could get a Twizzler. You could get a straw, any of those kinds of things for your hands and mouth. Those are all helpful, but keep taking your breaks. Fresh air and sunshine are very helpful.
I know there's a couple of obstacles that people often say that they don't want to quit smoking. One of them is, oh, if I quit smoking, I'll gain weight. And my answer to that is usually, yes, you may gain some weight, but you'll also gain some clearer lungs and you'll be able to exercise so much more efficiently and so much better. And then the ability to exercise will counteract that weight gain. And another thing people say, oh, I'll just be so anxious all the time. I won't know what to do if I quit smoking. But again, just stay in there, stay determined, normalize what life would be like if you didn't smoke. The other incentive anymore, I don't smoke, so I don't know, but the cost of cigarettes, I was somewhere and how much is a package of cigarettes now? $10?
$10, $100 a carton.
$100 for a carton. So just think, how much do you smoke a day? Multiply that by 10. And if you multiply that by a year, what kind of bonus would you give yourself at the end of that year?
Yeah, maybe calculate that, or even just calculate what you'd save weekly. Because if it's, you know, $10 for just one pack and you're going through multiple packs a week, maybe that's, you know, you take a nice dinner on a Friday night with your significant other or with your friends, go out and celebrate each week, kind of come up with a reward for yourself, and be able to take that money, maybe get cash out and put $10 in a jar for each box of cigarettes that you don't smoke. And then go take that and do something nice for yourself that's a little bit healthier and more fun, and that can kind of give you a little bit of a reward for that.
I had one of my patients tell me that she had been quit for 20 years, and still every morning she got up and walked over to that same drawer where her cigarettes were. But what she did was just that. Back then, cigarettes were $5 a pack, and she was a pack a day smoker. So she took that $5 and put it in that drawer. So when she would absentmindedly go out of habit to that drawer and go, oh, there's money in there. Oh yeah, I don't smoke anymore. And she put another $5 in.
Wow.
And she bought really nice Christmas gifts for all her grandkids.
That is a powerful visual, to be able to open that drawer and just see a pile of money. And that will add up so fast. Wow, that's a great visual.
Yeah. I've had patients tell me over the years, you know, I do want to quit, but I'm not ready. And so I think, well, what would make you feel like you're not ready? And one of my patients says, I'm not ready because I don't believe I can do it yet. And I think it's just mindset. It's just normalizing that I could do this, just believing. Believe that it's unhealthy for you. Believe that you'll feel better when you do quit, and believe that you could do it. And as Gina mentioned, it may take 30 tries. So what? You know, if it takes 50 tries, keep going, keep trying, keep at it.
And if you're at two packs a day today or one pack a day, cutting back to a half a pack is a big deal. Cutting back is a big deal. So if you can get yourself down to 10, down to 5, there's lots of ways to do it. You know, add up how many. If you want to have 5 in a day, then you're going to have one every 2 hours. And then you can do that. Next week, we're going to go 3 hours between cigarettes, that sort of thing. Any kind of games you can play with yourself are very valuable, just to get yourself a little bit closer to the goal each time.
Another game you can play is, if you ask yourself the question, what is there something I believe I could do in the future, but I can't do now because I smoke? So that may be something like ride a bike, go golfing all day, take a really long walk or a hike, whatever it is, whatever you think, okay, I'd really like to do that, but I can't because I'm a smoker. And anymore, they've banned smoking so many places. So I can't go to this nice restaurant. I can't go to the movies. You know, whatever that is, and use that as an incentive. You know, I haven't been to the movies in years. I really like to go. And so, but I'm going to have to learn to quit so that I can make it through an entire movie without having to sneak out.
And it's not just physiological. This is also emotional. Those cigarettes have been your best friend for 30 or 40 years. They've been there since you were a teenager. They've taken you through spouses and bad times and good times. So they are your best friend. But they're a best friend that isn't very good for you. So you need to find some other friends to hang out with, and just kind of put those down. You've put down bad friends in the past. This is much the same.
One thing I will add on to that, though, is if you're thinking of quitting, the time to not quit is if you're going through a very stressful situation. If you're going through a job situation, separation, divorce, you know, you're going to move house anytime soon, things like that. If you're going through a really difficult emotional situation, maybe now's not the time to say, I'm going to quit smoking. So get yourself through those situations and then decide to do it. Although there are people that have told me, you know what, if I'm going to go through this, I'm going to go through it all at the same time. And boom, they just quit and they got through everything else that was going on and then it was done. So it really depends on what kind of person you are.
We've talked about a lot of strategies today. I think this will be really helpful for people. We've talked about pharmacological. We've talked about habits. We've talked about support groups. Very good program, ladies.
I'll add a couple of resources that I found. There's an author named Tom Ferguson. He wrote a book called The Smoker's Book of Health. And then there's another book by the author Terry Rustin. He's a doctor, and he wrote a book called Quit and Stay Quit. They're old books, but they're time-tested.
And also, just never forget that there are counseling groups, there are support groups. You can always try to quit with somebody else who you know, one of your friends or spouses who's trying to quit as well. Like we said, this is a very emotional process to go through. So finding resources, finding support, finding that new best friend to help you get through this time is going to be really important. So just don't forget that along the way.
Well, stay tuned for the next episode of the Cozy Lung Lounge, because we're going to talk about vaping. And is that a good strategy for quitting smoking or not? We will talk about that on the next episode. So come back next time, or if both episodes are out, you can listen to them back to back and compare, and let us know what you think about our advice.
Our episode on vaping is actually coming out tomorrow. I wanted to do them back to back so that everybody could kind of listen and compare the two. Or if you do one versus the other, you can get all that information at once. So we will see you guys tomorrow for the next episode. And I hope everybody has a good day.
Thanks for joining. Bye.
Hi, friends. This episode of the Cozy Lung Lounge is brought to you by Hootenanny Joy, where your health and wellness take center stage. At Hootenanny Joy, we know how overwhelming it can be to stay on top of your health, especially when life gets busy or chronic illness adds challenges. That's why we've created self-study programs designed to meet you right where you are. These programs are simple, flexible, and packed with tools to help you thrive. And they come with something extra, access to a live health coach, that's me, to guide you every step of the way. Whether it's improving your sleep, learning to nourish your body, or managing stress, our programs combine proven science with practical or real-life strategies. You can work at your own pace, get the answers you need during coaching sessions, and feel confident you're making progress. Ready to take that first step? Visit HootenannyJoy.com to explore the programs and choose the one that fits your journey best. Hootenanny Joy, because your health deserves a little joy.